Deanna Faye's baby weighed 1 pound, 9 ounces and had less than a 1 in 3 chance of survival when she was born prematurely at 5 months. After extensive intervention by doctors, Faye and her husband were finally allowed to take their child home. But then they were stunned when AOL CEO Tim Armstrong, Deanna's husband's boss, issued a press statement that the medical expenses of the distressed baby were to blame for cutbacks in all employee retirement benefits at the company. The harrowing fight to keep their baby alive and the media firestorm that followed Armstrong's declaration is the subject of Deanna Faye's new book called Girl in Glass, How My Distressed Baby, by the way, is in quotes, defied the odds, shamed a CEO, and taught me the essence of love, heartbreak, and miracles. It's published by Bloomsbury. I'm very pleased it has brought Deanna to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
When you became pregnant with your second child in 2012, did doctors think there might be some medical complications?
Not at all. It was a completely uncomplicated pregnancy, just like my first. In fact, at one point, the doctor said, well, you're one of the patients we never have to worry about.
And then medical complications suddenly became apparent. How early?
The morning that she arrived, I woke up in pain. By the time I got to the hospital, the doctors had to deliver her via emergency C-section.
So this is surprise labor.
No warning signs, nothing at all until she was born.
Okay, well, other children are born prematurely. When did the doctors tell you something was wrong in this situation?
From the time I arrived at the hospital, I knew that for a baby to be born this prematurely was going to be a huge obstacle for my daughter to overcome. And the first time I saw her, it seemed very clear that she seemed like she wasn't supposed to be seen yet. And her skin could hardly hold itself together. So even as just a mother with no medical knowledge of the details of her condition, I knew the seriousness of the prematurity. And then I was told that she had a 1/3 chance of dying before we could ever bring her home, roughly a 1/3 chance of surviving with severe disabilities. And that was even before she suffered a hemorrhage in her brain.
And you write about being too scared to even name her.
I was. There was a part of me that shifted into self-preservation. I was so terrified of losing her that in some ways I tried to keep myself from loving her. But at the same time, the first time I reached into her incubator, she held onto my hand. And from that moment, I knew, you know, she's my child and I'm her mother. And she's fighting for her life with everything she's got. And all the least I can do is be here with her and love her with no guarantees.
It wasn't just the brain hemorrhage. Her right lung collapsed, and then she stopped breathing.
One night, we got a terrifying call from the NICU that said that she stopped breathing. And the doctors intervened once again, and she immediately responded. But, you know, it was extremely difficult for me to ever let go of the feeling that I could lose her all over again.
Are these sorts of things at all common with premature births of this sort?
When my daughter was born, I had no idea about the true tolls of prematurity. It turns out prematurity is, you know, one of the most common and also still overlooked medical crises in America today. We think we know what a preemie is. You know, it sounds so common, even kind of cute. But prematurity is still the number one cause of death among newborns, the number one cause of disability among children. It affects 1 in 9 births. That's 450,000 babies every year. And the great thing is that the care of premature infants is actually one of the things we can be proudest of in the American healthcare system. Most of these babies do go on to live full, rich, meaningful lives. But that doesn't obscure the fact that for babies like my daughter, born at the edge of viability, the journey is extremely uncertain.
You were a published novelist and essayist, but I assume that means you also didn't have any medical insurance. Your husband, Peter, was an editor at the Huffington Post, where I think he did, right? The Huffington Post at that point had been bought by AOL?
That's right.
How long had he been working there?
I think about 3 years at the time of the quote-unquote distress babies controversy.
What kind of insurance plan did AOL have?
It was a generous insurance plan. It was a solid benefits package. And I want to be clear that my family is fortunate. We were fortunate that my daughter is thriving today. We're fortunate that her care was mostly covered by employer-sponsored insurance, and I'll always be grateful for that. But what I've come to see is that these threats to our medical privacy in the workplace are very widespread and real, and the damage for people who suffer violations of this nature can be devastating. In the aftermath of the controversy, I received messages from a woman who lost a baby and then was shamed at a company meeting by an insurance rep who said, well, rates are going up for everyone because someone had the nerve to have this baby that cost the company a lot of money. I heard from people who were fired after a cancer diagnosis.
How long was Mila in the hospital and how much did it wind up costing?
She was in the hospital for 3 months, and no one outside of the corporate boardrooms knows exactly how much her care cost or how it might have affected the bottom line. In some ways, the system is meant to be completely opaque to the rest of us. I do know that her care was expensive in the same way that anyone in intensive care, the hospital bills add up. But I think it's important to remember that one thing is our hospital billing system is hugely inflated. You know, it's a system where Band-Aid costs $6, a box of tissues costs $11, a single stitch costs $500. So when we name a price tag for a child's life, the numbers can be extremely misleading. And I think we have to take back step back and say, well, what could be worth more than a human life? We are at a point in our society, I think, where we often feel like healthcare spending is zero sum, and ordinary people often feel like we're pitted against one another, and many people can't help recoiling at something like, you know, $1 million price tag for a baby. At the same time, $12 million for a CEO in a single year, that seems completely ordinary to us.
And that's what Tim Armstrong was being paid?
Right. And again, I'm not here to rake Tim Armstrong over the coals. You know, it's not about me versus Tim Armstrong. But I think we need to consider, what are we risking as a society when we price a child in this way?
My guest is Deanna Fei, F-E-I. Her book, Girl in Glass, How My Distressed Baby Defied the Odds, Shamed a CEO, and Taught Me the Essence of Love, Heartbreak, and Miracles. How long after Mila was born did Tim Armstrong have this town hall style meeting for the company to make his announcement about health costs?
It was 1 year after she came home. It was actually the same week that she took her first steps.
Now, they had had a strong quarter at this point. Did everybody assume that he was calling people together to tell them how great things were going?
Yeah, it turns out that Tim Armstrong had found himself on the defensive about recent cuts to the retirement savings plan, just as he was making the press rounds to tout the fact that the company had just posted its best earnings in years. So there was this blowback that he had to respond to about, well, you know, why did these cuts have to be made when the company is doing so well? And that's when he blamed my daughter.
And Obamacare,
that's right.
Now, how was that linked to cuts in retirement funds?
Well, at first he blamed Obamacare. He said that Obamacare would result in increased health care costs for the company overall. And a lot of CEOs have made this claim. In fact, my husband had overseen coverage of, you know, this spate of mega-rich CEOs blaming Obamacare for increased health care costs and then offsetting those costs on the backs of their employees. In this case, observers actually quickly denounced Armstrong's claims as quote-unquote totally bogus. And that's when he decided to shift the blame to employees' babies.
Was your family mentioned by name?
We were not mentioned by name, but almost immediately, coworkers of my husband's were able to identify our family.
And according to his statement, you weren't the only AOL employee with a costly birth. He
That's
said
right.
AOL paid $1 million each to make sure these babies were okay in general.
That's right. And I did hear from the other mother of this so-called distressed baby, she thanked me for speaking up, and she told me that she couldn't because she didn't want to jeopardize her own job.
And what about your husband? Was he targeted at work by other employers when they were told that your family's medical expenses were the reason that their benefits were being cut back?
I don't know. I don't think anyone said, you know, you're the reason that our retirement savings were cut. But I think for any employee who's been singled out in that way, it's extremely hard to overcome a sense of shame and guilt and a feeling of exposure of the most personal and deepest trauma that our family had ever been through.
Is your husband still at AOL?
No, he left soon after the controversy. And again, I just want to emphasize that our family was fortunate. He was able to leave on his own terms, but a lot of people are not as fortunate. And when they're dependent on their employer for their paychecks and their health insurance policies, and in many cases struggling to overcome the medical crises that they've been targeted for, they're extremely vulnerable to being exposed and also being helpless to do anything about it.
Do we know whether the company really lost $2 million in medical expenses with these two cases of premature births?
I don't know that. I dug into the numbers in my book, and no matter how I looked at it, the numbers simply didn't add up. It's possible that the hospital billed that much. It's highly unlikely, though, that the company would have actually paid that amount. The hospital billing is meant to be so inflated that it tends to be reduced, you know, by 40% to 60% through negotiations with the insurance company. And AOL seems to be self-insured, though they won't confirm that. And also, that is also something that's not transparent to employees, because on your insurance card, you have the name of an insurance company that it turns out is really only contracted to handle administrative tasks. They're not the ones actually paying out the claims. So it's possible that if AOL is self-insured, they might have had to directly pay the cost of my daughter's care. But if the company was run in a way where the bottom line was vulnerable to the hospital bills of a couple of babies, that means that the CEO and the management team were responsible for something that might have cost the company that amount of money. You can't really structure a health plan hoping that no one will have a premature baby. The fundamental purpose of health insurance is to pool the risks that are unforeseeable for any individual, but totally predictable in the aggregate.
Didn't your situation bring up another problem, that AOL knew your medical details, that the CEO was looking at them, and that's something you couldn't been aware of? You've become an advocate for privacy.
I have. Health privacy was not an issue that ever struck me as one that affected the daily life of my family. But what I've come to see, it's an issue of basic civil rights. It's a question of social justice, because without the right to health privacy, ordinary Americans can't protect ourselves from the threat of having our personal health information used against us by cost-cutting employers. Employers are increasingly motivated to monitor employees' personal health, and it's extremely tempting for them to look for the individuals whose medical bills stand out.
I'd imagine that the PR department at AOL must have gone crazy when this happened, and the media immediately focused on Tim Armstrong's statement with headline after headline using the term distressed babies, a really unfortunate term. He later apologized, didn't he?
He did. He offered me a gracious personal apology, and I appreciated it. And on a personal level, I'm sure that he regrets what he said. But this is about a lot more than me and Tim Armstrong. I think what the controversy exposed is the fact that so many of us are vulnerable to this kind of exposure.
And you write that one of the hardest things for you and your husband was the judgment in Armstrong's statement, as if we, I'm quoting, selfishly gobbled up an obscenely large slice of the collective health care pie. As you pointed out earlier, he made $12 million that year. Even if it was $2 million, that was small compared to what he gets paid normally.
Yeah, and what I also find interesting about the amount of money that he made was that a large part of it was a bonus that was specifically pegged to his cost cutting. So employers often have this direct motivation to look for, you know, employers often have this direct motivation to monitor employees' personal health, and there's this sense that employee benefits must be zero sum while CEO bonuses are somehow untouchable. And I don't think it has to be that way. I think there are plenty of profitable ways to run a company without viewing your employees as somehow subhuman. And I'm sure that, you know, if all we have to do is say, well, what if that was my child? And it becomes pretty clear that, of course, she deserved the care that saved her life.
How is Mila doing today?
She's doing amazing. She's 2.5 years old. She's getting all the mileage she can get out of her terrible twos, you know, throwing operatic tantrums, eating cookies faster than her big brother. And every day with her, I consider a blessing.
You used to, among the places that publish you were the Huffington Post. Are you still published there?
I do not.
But you have been in the New York Times, Slate, and other publications, and Deanna Fay is also the author of the novel A Thread of Sky. She will be on a panel tonight at 7 o'clock at the Powerhouse Arena in Dumbo. For more information about that and to RSVP, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. The book, Girl in Glass, with a very long subtitle, How My Distressed Baby Defied the Odds, Shamed a CEO, and Taught Me the Essence of Love, Heartbreak, and Miracles. It is published by Bloomsbury. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.